vaguely mean. Okay. So the topic of the shiur is Hilchot Nesiyot, but it basically means any halachot, any halacha that comes out that has to do with travel. So the first and obvious section of the shiur is going to be about Tfilat HaDerech. Now, one very, very striking thing about the Tfilat HaDerech is that although it's mentioned in the Gemara, the Rambam doesn't mention it anywhere. The Rambam does not mention Tfilat HaDerech. In other words, having a tefillah before a person goes out to travel. Nonetheless, the Shulchan Aruch in Simon Kuf Yud and Orochaim mentions it. And the first issue is, how far does a person have to travel in order to be chayav to say Tfilat HaDerech? So the answer is, a parsa. You travel a parsa, you chayav Tfilat HaDerech. Okay? Yes? Alright. What's a parsa, you might ask? I was waiting for someone to ask that. The answer is Dalad meal. Four meal. What's a meal? No. Four meal is about 8,000 amot.
We have American or English.
Okay, 4 kilometers. 4 kilometers. 2.5 miles. Roughly. Okay, roughly. Now, what?
Would that mean like in a city or like?
I'm going to get to that. What do you think? All right. Now, one question which might not be obvious to you is when we talking about 2.5 miles or 4 kilometers, are we talking about a distance? Or perhaps we're talking about a time. In other words, the amount of time it takes a person to walk 4 mil. How long does it take a person to walk a mil? Anybody know? 18 minutes. It's about 18 minutes to walk halachically. If you're a halachic person, it takes you 18 minutes to walk a mil. Okay? Multiplied by 4 is 72 minutes. Rav Avad Yosef in his Yechav Yedat Paskin Salach Lamaisa that is a sheer bizman. It's the amount of time that it takes you to travel. It's not a distance thing. Most of the poskim are of the opinion that it's a distance thing. There's a big nafkamino. A nafkamino would be between, let's say, Alon Shvud and Yushalayim, or you chayv tefilas aderach. So according to Rav Avad Yosef, you're not chayv tefilas aderach. And according to everybody else, or the mainstream shita, it's a din in distance, and you'd be chayav tefilas aderach. Rav Amichal Zatzal used to be noheg in order to alleviate any suffix. Used to put tefilas aderach into the Shema Kolenu of the Shemona Esrei before he would travel in the morning. Yes.
So why are you talking about? So is it distance driving? Time driving?
Doesn't make a difference if you're walking or taking a rocket. It's 72 minutes of travel.
Oh, so if you're walking, like then you would say tefilas aderach.
If you walk for 72 minutes, it can't take you longer than 72 minutes. It's a halacha is not the 4 mil, that's what you mean to say.
How long you're
it's 72 minutes.
Okay.
It's the length of walking for me, which is 72 minutes. The shear is 72 minutes. Okay? So that if you go for a trip that would take you less than 72 minutes by car, you wouldn't be chayav. Now, it's only talking about in between two cities. It's not within one city. There are cities that travel could take you 72 minutes within the city. You're not chayv, there's no din of tefilas aderech. Even if you go through a very, very dangerous neighborhood in that city, you still wouldn't say tefilas aderech. However, if you're going intercity, which is where Chazal made the takana, intercity, in between two cities, so then, if you're going to a place that's particularly dangerous, you could say, or should say, tefilas aderech in between those cities. In other words, even if it would be less than 4 mil, or less, meaning less than a parsa, less than 2.5 miles, if there's danger in between those two cities, so you would say tefilas aderech. Pardon me? So I think Alon Shvut to Yushalayim is more than 4 kilometers.
Good point.
No? But let's say Alon Shvut to Neve Daniel. Let's say from Alon Shvut to Neve Daniel, if you consider it a dangerous route, so you would say to Yosef Derech.
It's 12 kilometers. Yeah. What if you like consider it a dangerous way of traveling? Like, let's say you're driving with a driver you don't exactly trust. This
I mean, you find yourself in a car with this quite crazy driver, you're saying.
Oh, yeah. You don't follow the rules, it's right.
Interesting question. I guess you really have to like get out, but no, I hear what you're saying. No, I think that's an interesting question. Maybe you could say Tfilas Adarah.
Is it a din in how you feel?
We're going to touch on that a little bit later. We'll touch on that. In any case, a person should start to say Tfilas Adarah after he embarks on his trip, not before. So that in car travel, it would be after you would leave not just the gate of Alon Shvut, but a little bit outside of Alon Shvut. I usually try to say it right about Rami Levi. Okay? Around Rami Levi to say to Yosef Derech. With planes, halachically, it would really be after liftoff, because that's when you've embarked on your journey. But the truth is that most people very much like to say to Yosef Derech before liftoff. Right? That's when they feel they need it the most. So, you are allowed to say it before, even though L'chadchil, it is better to say once you embark on your journey. I think 80% or 90% of the time when you take a plane ride, you're really going by car to the airport, and usually the airport is outside of the tchum of the city, and therefore is considered separate from the city, and then the right thing to do is to make a tefillas aderech in the car once you leave the confines of the city, and you're mechaven, just a second, I'm sure I'm going to be answering your questions, you're going to be mechaven for the entire trip. If a person forgets to say Tfilas Aderech, and then right before the plane starts to take off, he remembers he didn't say Tfilas Aderech, which often is the case, then he's allowed to say Tfilas Aderech even before liftoff. But if, you know, again, there's an example where you really started on your journey in any case. Rarely you have an airport that's in the middle of a city and not outside the confines of the city, then you have, you know, a little bit of a suffix, but either way, you yotze tefillas aderech, even if you said it before you embarked on your journey. Hold on, I might answer your question. Each day is a separate chiyuv in tefillas aderech, and therefore, if a person would, let's say, go on a plane or a train, and he says tefillas aderech before, and he travels the entire night through, okay, he should say if he's awake the entire time, when dawn breaks, he should say Tfilas Aderech again without Shema Malchut. Okay, that's how the Mishnah Berurah paskens. If, however, he fell asleep any time during the night, then when dawn breaks, he should say Tfilas Aderech with a bracha. Let's say a person takes a plane ride from, I don't know, here to the United States and stops off in England on the way. In other words, to change planes, as an example. So even though you're changing planes, it's not relevant. It's one Tfilas Aderech for the entire trip. If, however, your plan was to take a plane ride to London and get off there for a day, and then when you got off in London, you looked around and you said, why would I want to come to London? And you decide to take the next plane to the United States, then you'd be chayav to make another Tfilas Aderech, because again, you weren't mechaven. It's like making two separate trips. Yes, Yosef, you have a question?
Yeah. All right. So the whole din of interstate travel, is that just like if you cross uninhabited kind of land in the middle, or let's say like you technically like it's a different city?
Oh, okay. So I'm glad you raised it. I should be clear about that. It has to be uninhabited. It has to be an area that doesn't have houses in between. If you have like an urban sprawl, and just because it's called different cities, doesn't make a difference. Halachically, Medinei Tchumim, it's one big city. Yes?
If you're traveling intercity, do you measure the shear from your start point to your end point, or from the moment you leave one city to the moment you get to the other city?
The moment you leave one city to the moment you get to another city. If there's less than a parsec in between, then normally you would not make Tfilas Aderech. Yes, Zach?
What are the cities? Like a few houses?
If there's a gap, 150 amot, 75 meters, or approximately 75 yards, that's no man's land in between houses, but it has to be, it has to basically completely separate this patch or this band of empty, you know, empty lots or whatever it is, has to separate the cluster of houses completely.
So
if 5 miles down that direction the houses connect, then it would be considered a connected city. You have to use Google Earth. That's separate cities, right? Separate cities. Even again, if it would have, even if it have the same name, you know, there was a clusters of houses that are separated by a band of 150 amor, 75 meters, is considered separate. And really, Google Earth is a very good tool to use for tchumim and for tfiyasaderech and such. Yes.
If someone's in a rural city where there's large gaps between the houses because there's farms. No, sorry, not rural city. I did not mean the city. And then in a rural area where there's like large gaps between the houses, that's probably
not a city.
75.
Not a city. And if you would travel in any direction, you would have to make tfiyasaderech.
You would. If that's what separates, if there's like a rural village separating between your city and that city, would you say that?
You would say to us that. Right. Yes, Ezra.
What does it mean to have like inhabit land? You need to be traveling through land? Because when you go to your shalet, basically from here to your shalet, you have like a threat being left and going the whole way, but you're not going through it. You're going to like.
It's not the, it isn't the whole way.
If it, let's say it was.
If it was, yes. Then it would be one city.
Even if you're just going around it?
Right. Let's say you had a city that was shaped like a C shape, and you're going from one end of the sea to the other end of the sea. So that wouldn't be two separate cities.
Even if your entire trip is outside of the city?
I believe so. Yes.
And wait, from here to your shalai, there
you say it.
Like,
you could say it.
There is a 4 kilometer gap, like within.
I'm pretty sure. I could recheck it, but you know, I'm pretty sure there's a gap. Yeah. According to Rav Avadia Yosef, you shouldn't say it. You know, so there are a lot of people. I could tell you on myself. I say without shame or malchut. Because of the Shita Rav Avadia Yosef. If I remember, I would say in my Shema Kolenu before I travel. Yes?
Is it a matter of form of transport that you're using?
No. It doesn't matter.
You're getting like a day high, or a few days high.
Same shear, 4 kilometers, 2.5 miles. Yes?
Two questions. One is, in the case you're saying if you're going to the airport, going in the car, let's say you have somebody else saying they're in the car.
I'll get that soon, very soon, very, very soon.
My second question, which I guess you're going to get to, is it deen in the car or is it deen on the god? Chetz or god?
Car?
Or the god, or each individual within the car.
Okay, I'll get that. Yes?
What is the start of a new day?
Dawn. Dawn. You and Amr Ashraf.
So going to the airport at 9 on this day and new flights at 1 a.m.?
No. You make one brother. If you start out at night, midnight even, whatever it is, and you start going, then dawn would be a new day. All right. So Daniel raised an interesting question. If you have, the way Daniel put it, is it din in the gavra or din in the chefza? Right. That's what you said, Daniel. Don't write that down, by the way. Don't write gavra chefza down, please. The question is like this: should you be following Minhag Bnei Akiva, or should you do like everybody else? Okay, Minhag Bnei Akiva is one guy gets a girl, okay, gets up in the front of the bus and says Tfilas Haderech for everybody in the bus, right? Okay, halachically that's incorrect. That's not the right thing to do. For those of you who are interested in sources, because I know someone is going to argue with you about this, generally speaking, when you have a chiyuv bracha like tfilas haderech, and nobody holds it in the car, okay, or alamichya, okay, something that sometimes people also share, you've got a mazon also if you don't have a zimun. In all those cases, Each person is chayav to make their own bracha, and you're not supposed to be yotzei with somebody else with a bracha. Zimun is a special din. Oh, did I say I was going to give a shiur on that today? I think I might have. Anyway, I have to give a shiur on that sooner or later. But zimun is a special din. If you don't have a zimun, so you just have two guys or something like that, or, yeah, and one person shouldn't be making birkat hamazon for the other person. As a matter of fact, the Gemara says, oilo, right, or woe is to him that his son has to make birkat hamazon for him because he can't make birkat hamazon on his own. And therefore, the halacha is, in all these cases, each individual should be making on his own. I say should because if a person is indeed such an amaretz that they're not capable of making the bracha themselves, then somebody else could be motzi them, and they sit, they listen, mechavim to be yotze, and then say answer amen, and you could do that. The Mishabura is found in Kuf Tzadi Gimel Sifkat and Hay, also in Kuf Hay Gimel Sifkat and Zayin. Okay. Another interesting issue, by the way, is the issue of microphones. Microphones is a big machloket. I'm not going to get into it. It's a very interesting shiur in and of itself. But electronic reproduction, etc. Microphone is a machloket between Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal and Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal. Rav Moshe Feinstein allows microphones, and the shaila was asked him was for Havdalah, but... And he said, l'chadchila, he doesn't think it's a good idea. He says, mamash b'shasat chak. There's no other solution. You know, some old woman is in the hospital, and no one there can make havdalah. She can't make her own havdalah. So then you can make havdalah for her over the phone, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal felt very strongly that you cannot be yotzei with a microphone. He even says, a person is so hard of hearing that he can't hear without a hearing aid. According to Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, he's not yotzei any mitzvah that has to do with shmiah. Okay, and therefore, just another point that when it comes to the situation that everybody in the bus is an amal aretz, and someone has to get up and make it tefillas aderech for them, so it should be done without a microphone. It should be done like you know, speaking out. On a practical level, the best thing to be metaken, even if you're part of a bnei kiva tiyul, is to say on the microphone, everybody please take out their sitters and make your own tefillas aderech. And if you can't, so I will say it slowly on the microphone, and you should say it slowly together with me, word for word, so that you're yotzei on your own. If you think that still there are people on the bus that won't do it, then I would say the best thing is to loudly say tefillas aderech, explain to them. If you could say along with me slowly, that's the best thing. If not, be mechaven to be yotze with me, and I'll say it slowly. Okay? Yes, Yosef. Okay? All right. The Mordechai raises a very interesting... Not me, the Rishon, right? Raises a very interesting question. And he says that the rule when it comes to brachot is that if you have a long... A bracha with a long nusach and a bracha to Hashem at the end, the rules are... You should have a bracha to Hashem in the beginning. It should be a bracha smuch l'chavrta. The bracha is too big, too large, so Chazal, the rules are that you're supposed to sandwich it in between a bracha to Hashem, and you decide. So Mordechai asks, so why is that tefillas aderech not constructed such? So he makes his own artificial bracha smuch l'chavrta by coming up with idea of making a bracha before tefillas aderech. Now, right, unless the person sitting next to you is a dwarf and you can make Mishana Abrius on him, right? You have to come up with some other bracha to make before Tefillas Aderech, right? So you could take out a little bit of water and, you know, make a Shakol Niyebid Baro and sip the water, or you could take, you know, drink a good, let's say, Moli Lugmav of the water and make a Brain of Fashot so that the Brain of Fashot is the bracha, and then right away you go into Tefillas Aderech. That's if you can. The Mordechai suggested, interestingly enough, I think it's quoted even in the Shulchan Aruch, look at Kuf Yud or Simen Vav, that if you can, it is better to do, but it's not ma'akeh. Any questions on Tefillas Aderech? None? Yes?
I was just curious, is it an actual obligation that you have to say it, or do you have the option of saying it if you're going this?
What? Is it an obligation to say,
yeah,
or is it just a protection to say?
Yeah.
So that's a very good question. It's a good question. And some explain the reason why the Rambam doesn't list it is because he felt it wasn't an obligation to say. Meshulchanov says that one should say it. I don't know if someone is necessarily chote if he doesn't.
Maybe that's for Minhag Ne'akiva
something. Then why did they do it on the microphone? Why do they do it on the microphone? Yeah.
Is there any concept of like having respect out of the, so let's say like you're in a tramp and the driver, you're sitting next to the driver and he says, can I say it to the driver, start saying it. So if you say your own to the driver, it's sort of like being saying that I don't respect
them to the idea
of,
you
know,
I hear what you're saying.
I think they think that theirs is like, you know, covers the car.
You had a driver that told you it was a din in the car?
I just assume that. I always feel bad. Like, you know, if I'm sitting behind this, then it doesn't matter. But if I'm sitting next to them, and they see you, I'm saying to the other.
I don't think you should feel self-conscious about
that's
it.
That's one issue, says
me. Yes.
Just making like a, I don't know, not speaking of question, but can you, like, just assume that one person in the car says to the other, that everyone's protected?
Well, you never heard of a car accident where half the people, if some of the people were injured or killed?
Yeah, I guess.
Yes.
So it's not a mitzvah, then Katan can still say it. Like, you're going back to the B.A.P. thing again, so maybe the reason why you say it over the microphone is because kids aren't five.
No, they're five and chino. Of course the five
is. Right, so I'm saying, if you're doing it over a microphone, then they don't have any actual obligation. So this is a way for them to learn it by hearing it. Otherwise, they don't hear it here.
That's a point. Okay. Yes. If you're talking about a driver who can't do it.
So while you're doing that, can you just think?
No. No.
Yes. When it was composed?
When?
Yeah.
What year you want to know? 317.
That's AC.
That's
AD.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I just made that up. But you were happy. But you were happy when you knew a date.
You're a man of great knowledge.
For a moment, no. I don't really know. Okay. Seder. Are there any Kohanim in the room? Okay, so another thing about travel, Kohanim should be aware that you're not allowed to travel over graveyards, Jewish graveyards. Okay, non-Jewish graveyards don't give off tumah that goes straight up to the sky. Only Jews give off tumah that goes straight up to the sky. And there was an issue in Israel, I think they might have solved it, I'm hoping they solved it. But there was an issue for a couple of years that they were flying over a certain cemetery, I think in Cholon. And there was a period that one of the rabbanim of London actually put himself into a plastic body bag and zipped himself closed in the plane. If you don't believe me, by the way, I have an article right here.
I'm not going to say who it was.
Okay. Because in my opinion, it shows that a person's mamash, a yerushalayim, and mamash. But I don't want any of you to be laughing. Any of you empty people to be laughing at. I'm not going to give you the names.
Why would a plastic bag help out saying a metal rope?
Huh?
Why the plastic bag?
I'm not going to go in there. It's a halakhot of Tumantara. The headlines are like this. In Haaretz is El Al decides against body bags for Kohanim. Okay, in the Jewish Chronicle, Flying Dayan takes the rap.
Flying Dayan.
You can read the article later if you want. That might give you a hint as to who we're referring to with, if you know, if you're from London. But okay. Anyway, for those of you interested, you can read the article later. I'll give it to you. So there were flights. I don't know. I'm not up on things about it. But as 3 or 4 years ago, I remember there were specific flights that they knew for sure wasn't flying over Cologne, having to do the time of day. Another issue for Kohanim is that you can't be in a plane that a coffin is loaded onto the plane. So if you're like, you're sitting on a plane, you look out the window, you know, just wondering what's going on, and then you see them. You ever watch like the baggage being loaded? Okay, if you're a Kohen and you're on that plane there, you're hired to get off that plane. So don't look out the window if you're a Kohen. Now in America, the flight, I think the 2:30 or 2 o'clock flight out of Newark, LL flight was supposed to be guaranteed body free. Yes.
Is it a fee of that? Let's say you're flying across the world. Is it a fee of to check the route of the
plane?
No.
I don't think there's a fee. I don't think so. In other words, I think Roe, you could be somewhere on a Roe that you're not going to be flying over. But when they found out, see what happened is one of the pilots was Chozer Betshuva in El Al, and he, after a certain amount of time, blew the whistle on El Al and let the world know that they were flying over the Cholon Cemetery. And it was a whole issue. If you know how to use Google properly, you could Google and find the articles that went around because of it. Yes?
You say that every flight basically going out of London and El Al has a body underneath. You should quite not fly on El Al.
Is it true?
Yeah, apparently.
They're not that many. There's so many
Jews. Yeah, sounds about right.
There's so many Jews in England that want to be buried.
It's
a
declining community.
Huh?
It's a declining community.
I thought it lost something by making a special compartment for that.
Yes. They made some kind of a special compartment. It's controversial. If you want to speak to one of the world experts on the matter, speak to Rabbi Wolf. Does anybody know who Rabbi Wolf is?
Yeah.
Right, so you have to catch him when he's in the base matters. Speak to him. He's mamish, like one of the world experts on this issue. If you talk to him. The answer might be very, very long. Yeah.
How that this guy
I think they got some kind of a sock of holding that should be separate. I think that's what LL's kilu summit on, but I know that there's some kohanim that are mocked. I mean, would you get into a body bag if you thought that trick worked? I'm just saying. No, I'm just pointing out that they're posting that don't consider it. Anyways, next. I think I'm going to skip the issue. Has anybody ever landed in a plane on Shabbos?
No.
Has anybody actually landed on Shabbos in a plane?
I had a dream that happened.
Huh?
I had a dream that happened.
It shouldn't happen. No, it shouldn't happen. If ever you should always be wise enough not to schedule a flight next to Shabbos. But if for whatever circumstances you needed to, so you know how long a flight should take. It's very rare that a plane has to circle around because of fog or weather or something like that and not land. It's a rare thing, so it shouldn't happen. You have delays. You have a delay of a certain amount, so you know not to get on the plane because it's going to have to land on Shabbos. If you land on Shabbos, if you found yourself against your will in that situation, you would have a tchumen problem. In other words, halachically, you wouldn't be able to leave even the plane after it lands. Security would probably drag you out of the plane, and even after they drag you out of the plane, you probably wouldn't be allowed to stand camp out for 8 hours in between the plane and customs. You could try, but the halacha is you don't have a tchum. In other words, you're not allowed to walk more than 4 amos in any direction.
But you're in a building.
But you're not in a building. So according to some, if the sleeve comes out, and nowadays almost all airports have that, right? You don't get into a bus to go to the whatever. The sleeve comes out, so then the plane could be considered like as though it's connected to the building. And you'd be able to perhaps walk around in the building. You wouldn't be able to go further than that. But I'm not going to get into it. It's a rare occurrence. Let's get into a halacha that pertain to the plane travel itself. We're now in the plane. Okay? Number one. Halachically, it is preferable to wash Netilat Yadayim after you go to the bathroom or Negelwasser in the morning, not in a room that has a toilet. It's preferable not, you know, if you have a choice, you have a room that doesn't have a toilet, it's better to wash in a room that doesn't have a toilet. If, like in many cases, you know, the room has a toilet, so what you should do is close, you can flush the toilet and close the lid of the toilet before you wash Negelwasser. Okay? And the same is true, I guess, on the plane as well. In any case, if you washed Negelwasser or washed until you're dying if you enter the bathroom, obviously the bracha should be done outside the bathroom. And if the bracha is done outside the bathroom, the drying of your hands also should be done outside of the bathroom. Because you normally would make the bracha until you're dying and then dry your hands. Right? In the old days, they used to have like a little water fountain, like a place where you could put a cup in, press a button, it would fill your cup with water. They don't have it on the planes anymore. Alright? No one ever saw such a thing. So you don't have that much of a chance in any case. Another interesting question is, what do you wash your hands with? So, it is preferable, perhaps, to go to the stewardess and get yourself a plastic cup to wash with. If you use the cup that's in that bathroom, it's made out of paper, and it's specifically made out of the type of material that if water sits in it for more than a couple of hours, it will deteriorate. And therefore, halachically, there's a question whether that cup has a din of a kli. Has anybody ever seen someone like make kiddush on a plastic, two plastic cups, one inside the other? Yeah. Okay? Yeah. So that trick really comes from the tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein that was written like in 1953. Okay? Alright? Why do I say 1953? Because in 1953, around, you know, when he wrote the tshuva, paper cups were actually made out of paper. Now we call paper, everything a paper cup, even though we know it's made out of plastic. Paper cups were made out of paper, and they, like these airline, the bathroom cups, would melt after, you know, deteriorate or dissolve after a certain amount of time. And therefore, Rav Moshe said, if you want to make kiddush on using such a cup, you should put one cup in another to fortify the cup, so to speak. But nowadays, these cups, you don't really need to double them.
I've seen people double them.
Yes, that's what I said. A lot of people do. I don't know the lifespan of that. You could do an experiment now, fill it up with water, and come back tomorrow and see if it melts or not. So I don't think you really need to double your plastic cup when you make kiddush, and you don't need to double it when you're using it for Negelwasser. But you shouldn't use the paper ones in the bathroom. You shouldn't use those cups for Negelwasser. It's just as good in the bathroom of a plane to just put your hand, one hand underneath and press the thing, and then put another hand underneath and press the thing, because the plane is, the water that comes from is coming from a tank. It's coming from a tank, it's coming from a kli. And because it's coming from a kli, you could do Negelwasser, and you could do it until you're dying, without a cup. Pardon me?
Isn't there a maximum size of kli? The tank is bigger than that?
It's not. I don't think it's bigger than that.
Also, couldn't you say the faucet is the kli?
Not the faucet is the kli, but it might be called, according to some koch gavra. If a person is in a situation, let's say on a tiyul, where he has no kli to use at all, which would be rare, because usually you could, you know, the bottle you're drinking from you could use. But you could also just turn on a faucet and shut it in a shasat chak situation, and be also like that with koch gavra. Okay? Yeah. If a person falls asleep on a plane, okay, and he wakes up before Amud HaShachar. Amud HaShachar is when you look out at the horizon and you notice that one part of the horizon is lighter than another part. In other words, the sun is close enough that it's lighting up the horizon as Amud HaShachar. A person should make an antiyat yidayim, and if it's after Amud HaShachar, he makes a bracha. However, when later on, I'm sorry, back it up. If a person wakes up before Amud HaShachar, meaning he wakes up and he plans on not going back to sleep, he's going to stay up even though it's pitch black, dark outside. So then you would do the tefillah without a bracha, and then afterwards, when you see light on the horizon, you wash again with the bracha. Now, I don't know if there's enough time for this. We'll see what happens. Has anybody heard of lechem mizonos or mizonos bread?
Oh, the arm story.
Did you hear the new corrected version of the story?
Yeah.
You did?
I didn't hear the story.
Who said yeah?
No.
Go find.
How do you?
Huh?
I just read somewhere that
Do you want the old story or the new story? Lechem mizonos. Lechem mizonos is a belief of some people that you can have bread that you only make mizonos on. Okay.
It's true for Sephardi.
Maybe.
Is it
probably not? Probably not. And that's what I'm going to get to. I would say according to 95% of the accepted poskim, there's no such thing as mizonos bread. It simply doesn't exist. If something looks like bread and tastes like bread and you use it like bread, then it is bread. Okay? And you should wash, make onto yadayim, and you should make a hamotzi lechem in aretz, and you should bench on it. Even if the wrapper says on it mizonos bread. Okay? Now, let me explain why. There's a halacha called Pata Babikisnin. That's mentioned in the Gemara, it's mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch. Pata Babikisnin, according to most Rishonim, comes to the word kis, or pocket bread, or something that's filled. But according to other Rishonim, it's not something that's filled, it's rather something that's flat and crunchy, like a cracker. And according to other not Rishonim, other day in the Gemara, I said the word Rishonim, erased the word Rishonim. Other day in the Gemara, Pata Babikisnin is the pot of bread that's made with fruit juice or made with honey or sweetener. Okay, these are the different ideas that Pata Babikisnin mentioned in the Gemara. The Shulchan Aruch records all those different examples. Okay, as Pata Babikisnin. Now the halacha is that if you eat Pata Babikisnin in a normal amount, let's say, you would make a mizonos. In other words, it loses its status of bread. Got it? Now, in truth, a person that learned the sugya well would realize from all the examples and the things that the Rishonim is saying is that the reason why it loses its status of mizonos is because it's bread that's made in a form that people don't normally use as bread. It's snack food. In other words, crackers and pies or danishes, etc., etc., these type of filled items are snack food. It's not bread that's eaten as bread per se or as part of as a main kvira of the suda. Food, however, bread, even if it does have fruit juice in it, or even if it is topped with, let's say, tomato sauce and cheese, if it's the world over, the vast majority of people that produce pizza, it's eaten and consumed as pizza, it probably doesn't even, it's not even considered part of Babikisnin. Got it? Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva on this, but again, it's a tshuva from, I don't know, 1950s. I'm not so sure that he would feel the same way right now. And I would, my guess, my intuitive guess, is at least 80% of the pizza sold is consumed in place of a meal, not as a snack in between meals, but in place of a meal. And therefore, it's questionable, in my opinion, not even questionable, I think, Dover Poshut, that even one slice of pizza a person should wash and make hamotzi on. But 90% of the minhag, 90% of poskim nowadays feels that pizza, they follow Rav Moshe's psak, and therefore, if you eat two slices, you would make a bracha. Now the question is, why when two slices do you make hamotzi? And the answer is, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, pizza is part of a kissing. It's flat, it's cheese filled, etc., etc. But if you eat enough to be koveya suda, kriyat suda, which is about, I think, four to six beitzim, be koveya suda on that, so then even if it's part of a kissing, you still make a mozi on it. Are you with me so far? So let me just go over what I'm talking about. In other words, one could argue that anything that's produced to be eaten as a meal is not even part of a kissing. But even if you felt that pizza, as an example, is part of a kissin, if you play a suda on it, then you would wash and make hamotzi and make birkat hamazon on it. Now, alachat kama v'kama, and this is there's no almost no machlokas mishum brura pri megadim pri chadash. Almost all the poskim can say this, that if it looks and tastes like bread and you use it as bread in the meal, even if you felt that fruit juice could make this thing into pata babakis, and it would still be chayiv because of the fact that you're koveh suda on it. But again, most poskim would hold it's not even pata babakis because it looks, tastes, and is used as bread. And it's not relevant that you didn't use water but that you use apple juice. And therefore, halacha lamaisa, those little horrible rolls that you get in that package and on the airplane, you really should wash and make hamotzi for. Okay? I'm going to try to end with a story. Should I tell you what the story used to be?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. The story originally was, the Wilkinson thing was sitting on the plane, and they served him the meal, and he looked at the thing, and he saw a little note that said that the bread is mizonot, and there's no need to wash for it. And he called over the stewardess, and started to explain to her, well, it's not all that clear that, you know, according to some opinions, perhaps you would have to really wash on this. And so the stewardess looked down at him and said, I can't help you, sir. You really have to ask a rabbi. Okay? Now, not long ago, something like a week ago, somebody told me that I think it was Daniel Brooks. Who knows Daniel Brooks? Raise your hand. Okay, so ask him. I think he was the one that said this. Did he actually sat at Rav Lichtenstein's table not long ago on Shabbos and said, listen, I want to clarify this story. How did the story go? So this, by the way, is changing history with Daniel Brooks. Because this is already, this is part of the legends of Yeshiva Haaretzion. Rav Lichtenstein said it wasn't on the plane. It was at some kind of a bat mitzvah that someone was making, and he asked a waiter or a waitress, but she asked and answered the same answer. I'm sorry, sir. You'll have to ask your rabbi. We'll continue the halachas next time.